Good afternoon, honorable members, the DG and the team. Good afternoon, sir, from the People Advisor. I welcome sir, everybody here. We welcome. We agreed last night, honorable members, that we will convene today, seeing that there's no plenary, and proceed with the business that was supposed to have been done yesterday. So, we only received two apologies, one from Honorable Gunda and one from Honorable Baroto, who will join us into court. The rest of the other members, I assume, are still on their way to this meeting. So, unfortunately, we can't wait for those who are late. We will proceed, and without any waste of time, DG, the floor is yours, Mr.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity. I'd like to table the apologies of Minister Kwai, who is currently out of the country on national duties. We would like Chairperson, in presenting the visa, to paint a brief background that the Minister of State Security has indicated that a number of policy processes are currently underway. First, there is a national security strategy which is currently being processed with a view to tabling it within 3 months for consideration by Cabinet and followed later by a process of public consultation. This national security strategy will seek to inform all government departments dealing with national security with the approach that would need to be adopted. It is believed that there are a number of consequential amendments that will flow from the adoption of the national security strategy in order to ensure effective alignment. As a result of the proclamation that was passed by the President in 2009, Chairperson, it was felt that this bill must be dealt with as a technical bill, which will seek to put into law the dispensation that the President, through Proclamation 59 in 2009, initiated. So, what we present, therefore, today is a bill which seeks to give effect to the Presidential Proclamation R59 of 2003, which provides for a single Director General who is the accounting officer and centralizes command and control in the office of the Director General. It seeks to consolidate, Chairperson and honorable members, the previous structure, namely the National Intelligence Agency, the South African Secret Service, and the South African National Academy of Intelligence, while maintaining the separate functional mandate of the domestic and foreign branches. It seeks to transfer the training mandate to the agency and to integrate it with core business so that the main function of the Intelligence Academy should be to render core business training that would make our people more effective in core business. It will centralize corporate services, thus doing away with the current element of duplication and refocus its mandate to recruit, as a counterintelligence function. This is very important that we reorientate the work of corporate services. It is not just a support function. It is a core operational function, as this is the gateway through which new members get recruited into the intelligence community. Because of the fact that they are gatekeepers, they have at all times to become intelligence aware and sensitive. The bill purpose also seeks to centralize executive management services that will ensure the standardization of norms throughout the intelligence agency. As a way of background purposing, it bears repeating that prior to the decision to create a single intelligence service for a country, a comprehensive review was undertaken by an interministerial team comprising of ministers of state security, police, and defense and military veterans. The review process, Chairperson and honorable members, revealed the following three main concerns. First, it was the proliferation of statutory structure within the civilian intelligence community, which had led to an absence of sufficient coordination, led to overlapping mandates, unnecessary pet battles, and insufficient focus and wasteful duplication. Each structure had its own respective corporate services component. This resulted not only in a bloated corporate services component, but more importantly, in significant funding being directed to corporate support at the expense of operation and technical support. While endeavors had been undertaken over years to rationalize corporate services across the community through the establishment of a shared services dispensation, the implementation of this process, Chairperson, did not yield any progress. It continued to be costly. Despite the legislative requirement for coordination at strategic and operational level, there was an absence of information sharing and cooperation among civilian intelligence structures. This did not only constitute a major risk to our national security, it is also a vulnerability that is exploited by our adversaries. The lesson from 9/11, Chairperson, is that 9/11 happened because of stovepiping, poor coordination, and a rigid adherence to the need-to-know principle instead of the need-to-share principle. Importantly, Chairperson, the concentration of tactical and strategic intelligence under the auspices of NICOC created a security weakness within the intrusion and the leading, which might lead to any intruder, rather, accessing both tactical and strategic intelligence of the entire country. This remains undesirable and therefore in need for a solution. The minister has, though, decided that the review of NICOC architecture would await the outcome of the national debate that will ensue following the tabling of the national strategic, security strategy and the revision of the white paper on intelligence. To put what we have said, Chairperson, in a form of a diagram, the intelligence community and its oversight structure prior to 2009 looked as in the above structure. You can see the proliferation of structure under the minister in terms of the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, then the intelligence services comprised of the Intelligence Services Council on Conditions of Service, the ISC, the South African National Academy of Intelligence, National Intelligence Agency, the South African Secret Service, the Communication Security Pty Limited, the National Communication Center, and the Office of Interception Center. This proliferation led to a lot of duplication and therefore needed to be revised. This General Intelligence Law Amendment Bill, honorable members, now seeks to create a streamlined, lean, and focused intelligence community represented by the structure that you now see under the minister. We will have a National Intelligence Coordinating Committee. We will still have the Intelligence Council on Conditions of Service. Then we will have the State Security Agency, which we will have as part of its branches, the National Communication Center, the Academy, the domestic and the foreign branches. This makes for a focused and directed structure that will better serve the needs of our country and people. Chairperson, it bears repeating that several ministerial review committees were appointed from 1996 to 2008. Most recently, a commission was appointed under Mr. Joe Matthews, the former Deputy Minister of Safety and Security, to chair the Ministerial Review Commission. The Matthews Commission final report was not processed by the internal structure of government and ultimately by government. This resulted in an incomplete processing of a number of projects, including the Protection of Information Bill 2008 and the regulation of COMSEC, which remained unmandated sufficiently. The growth of the intelligence services in non-core areas, poor service delivery in critical areas such as vetting, briefings to the cabinet, and the support line functional departments in the delivery of their mandate persisted. We hope that the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill will help us to clone and focus this area, thus making sure that we have got a well-oiled intelligence machinery for the country. Chapter 3. The threat that we face as a result of the changed operational environment need us to ensure that the intelligence structures remain relevant, agile, and responsive. The creation, therefore, in 2009 by the President of the Republic of the State Security Agency seeks to focus the work that is done under the auspices of the SFA and that of the intelligence community as a whole and coordinated by the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee. It seeks to move towards the establishment of the Border Management Agency to work hand in hand with the existing security structures, and also ensure that we work towards focusing on the dual use technology that are currently in the pipeline as measures to help us provide a holistic response to the challenges we face. I have already indicated, Chairperson, that work continues on the national security strategy and of course the review of the White Paper on Intelligence, which we believe will provide the nation with yet another opportunity to debate the nature of our security and the structures that we need to ensure that it is managed effectively. Chairperson, it might be helpful so that the committee has an understanding that we go through some of the threats that are confronting the country and our nation that the State Security Agency must address and that the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill seeks to prepare a background for. The first set of threats relate to the stability of the Republic, its constitutional order and state institutions. The first of these is espionage, dealing with how foreign intelligence services, multinational corporations, and the private security industry operate in this terrain. It also spells out why and how we are vulnerable to espionage. The second threat we face relates to our porous borders, particularly security at ports of entry, their management, issues of technology, and other challenges in the border environment. The private security industry and its size, its ownership, and activities continue to pose a threat to the Republic. Cyber insecurity highlights our vulnerabilities in respect of key national infrastructure, our financial institutions, and commerce. Finally, political instability, focusing on problematic issues that are embedding themselves in our political system, such as political contestation and succession involving violence, violent protest action, manifestation of social instability, the culture of lawlessness, impunity, and disrespect for authority that has taken root in our society are threats that remain a source of concern. These are largely arising by the failure of the first-line department to respond to the issues that people raise legitimately. The second set of threats relate to the sustainable growth and development of our economy. The third threat involved in this include, amongst others, corruption. It is the first of these. It is important because of the manner in which it distorts the functioning of the state system and impacts on government revenue. The second aspect of the second threat is illegal migration, which generates tensions in society and can be exploited by crime syndicates and terrorist groups. These are driven by the push and pull factors of migration, as well as the impact of the immigrant footprint in our country. The third aspect of threats pertaining to the sustainable growth and development of our economy relates to the exploitation of strategic resources, specifically in the minerals and energy sector, the defense, aerospace, and armament sector, research and development institutions, land, and fake information. The fourth in this second threat is the illicit economy, including illicit mining, counterfeiting, illicit trade in alcohol, the textile industry, and the activities of emigre entrepreneurs. The third set of threats relates to the well-being, development, and upliftment of our people. The first threat here is organized and violent crime, which undermines the development of social cohesion of our people and threatens the legitimacy and integrity of the state and the functioning of its institutions. The second threat in threats pertaining to the well-being, development, and upliftment of our people is terrorism, specifically the use of our soil as a launch pad and logistical base, the use of our communication, transport, and financial infrastructure for operational planning and fundraising for terrorist groups and the transfer of money across our border. The last in this is environmental insecurity. This threat persists, Chairperson, to be critical in light of the work that we continue to do in the context of responding to our responsibilities and obligations to the Conference of Parties. The final threat is that of disasters, including extreme weather events and the need for us to properly audit the country's disaster management capacity. These chapters are the three major threats that we face together with the subcategories of threats that pertain to them. Chapters, there is a pressing need to ensure that the service delivery mandate of the intelligence service is not compromised by the existence of a lacuna in legislation. The current laws do not adequately provide for the restructured service, the state security agency. Given the nature and scope of work of intelligence, the country cannot afford to continue to operate under a weakened legislative framework for intelligence. There is ongoing work on the development of the national security strategy, as said, as well as the review of the white paper on intelligence, including the question of defining the national interest of the Republic, which will soon be published as a green paper. These are critical and relevant developments, Chairperson, which are being given guidance at the level of political leadership through the cabinet cluster system. It is envisaged that out of these initiatives will emerge a clear legislative program that will take this process to the next level. This presentation will now turn to the proposed legislative initiative that is required in order to complete the restructuring of the State Security Agency and put it on a sound legal footing in the context of the threats that we face. We repeat Chairperson Bailey for the completeness of record that the President issued a proclamation R59 of 2009 for the establishment of the State Security Agency. The functions of the components of the State Security Agency were codified and promulgated in 2009 in Government Notices and the Public Service Act 1994. The introduction of the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill in 2011 seeks to take this process forward. It will be followed by the introduction of a revised white paper on intelligence, the tabling and introduction of the national security strategy, and the introduction of the national interest doctrine green paper, which would also then be followed by the introduction of new legislation following the outcome of the national debate that all these instruments seek trigger. Chairperson, we have indicated that this bill is technical. It therefore does not introduce policy changes as work that is currently underway to review these various instruments that we have continued. It has since transpired that in the interim, the most effective approach was to amend the existing intelligence laws so that intelligence can operate on a sound legislative footing. This approach will ensure that the restructuring of the intelligence architecture under the State Security Agency is given the necessary legal basis to ensure stability and clarity on the service delivery mandate. The approach, therefore, is to produce an intelligence law amendment bill that will codify this state of affairs. The summary of the main amendments in respect of each of the existing laws are now what we are going to focus on. Chairperson, this bill seeks to repeal the Electronic Communication Security Pty Ltd and amend the Security Services Special Account Act of 1969, the Labor Relations Act of 1995, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act of 1997, the Private Security Industry Regulation Act of 2001, the Regulation of Interception of Communication Related Information Act of 2002, the Public Service Act of 1994, the Financial Intelligence Center Act of 2001, the Witness Protection Act of 1998, the Institution of Legal Proceedings Against Certain Organizations of State Act of 2002, the Government Employees Pension Law of 1996, the Medical Schemes Act of 1998, and the soon-to-be-repealed Protection of Information Act of 1982. In each of these laws, Chairperson, reference to the amalgamated structures are substituted with references to the agency, and where they enjoyed exemptions, these exemptions are transferred to the agency. We now turn to the National Strategic Intelligence Act amendments that are contained in the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill, Chairperson. The changes envisaged in the National Strategic Intelligence Act are aimed at ensuring that the contents of the Act continue to delineate mandates, roles and functions of national intelligence structures. The agency and the respective intelligence divisions of the National Defense Force and the South African Police Service. The bill mainly deals with the amendment of certain names of structures, like the deletion of service which refers to the erstwhile South African Secret Service, and in view of paragraph 1, under general above, there will be no implication for the agency. Chairperson, the bill focuses the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee to the production of strategic intelligence products without the brief of coordinating tactical and intelligence-led operations. To date, The law and practice have been diverted in this area. The bill seeks to align the two and ensure that there exists a sound basis for the rule of law. I think the person, this one, the minister, has since withdrawn that objective, so it's no longer applicable, because we agreed that there would not be policy changes in the way in which NICOG operates. The only thing that will be changing is actually the references to the agency without changing substantively the way in which the law currently is. I think this was an error on my part to have included that paragraph. In regard to the external vetting mandate of the agency, the bill has the following implications, Chairperson. Currently, the Director General may, after evaluating the information gathered during the vetting investigation, issue, degrade, withdraw, or refuse to grant the security clearance. The bill provides that the Director General may, in writing, delegate this authority to other members. Department of State may, at the request of the agency, establish vetting field work units that may, on request of the agency, assist the agency to gather information relating to criminal records, financial records, personal information, and other information which is relevant to determine the security clearance of the person. Again, this is not a policy change, as the substantive practice has actually involved this today. Concerning access to information by the agency and cooperation between national intelligence structures, the bill provides for the following. Notwithstanding any law to the contrary, no Department of State or statutory body shall withhold information in its possession or under its control from the agency when such information is reasonably required for any investigation in terms of its mandate regarding domestic, foreign, and counterintelligence. Shall be the duty of any of the members of the national intelligence structure to immediately transfer any intelligence in its possession that is acquired by another member for the fulfillment of its statutory function. In addition to the coordinator, the Director General of the SSA, the heads of the intelligence divisions of the SAPS and Defense, the bill provides that NICOG will also comprise the heads of the domestic division of the agency and the head of the foreign division of the agency, as they have now assumed responsibilities in both the domestic and foreign sectors following the demise of the National Intelligence Agency and South African Civil Service, respectively. This is to ensure that NICOG can access all available information in those structures. On the Intelligence Services Oversight Act, Chairperson, the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Bill provides for non-substantive amendments. All the envisaged changes seek to substitute the amalgamated structures that comprise the agency. In the main, intelligence services entities are substituted by the reference to the agency. So the office, the intelligence services, will fall away. The bill, Chairperson, is dealing with the deletion of names such as SAS and HOMSEC, and the amendment of names as to change the meaning of agency to refer to the State Security Agency and no longer the National Intelligence Agency. The bill does not contain any further amendments concerning the provisions of the Act and therefore does not have any new implications for the agent. In short, Chairperson, the oversight dispensation that was applicable prior to the establishment of the State Security Agency remains in place and will have the same responsibility of scrutinizing the the mandate and function of the state security agents. So nothing is taken away there. The next act, Chairperson, in the intelligence laws that we amend is the Intelligence Services Act. The main changes in this act are the amalgamation of the National Intelligence Agency, the South African Secret Service, the South African National Academy of Intelligence, and the Electronic Communications Security, PTY LTD, function to become the function of the state security agents. By deleting references to the above structure, the bill thus gives the state security agency continued existence. This means that the bill deletes the names such as SAS and COMSEC and changes the agency to refer to the state security agency and no longer to the National Intelligence Agency. Chairperson, the bill does not contain any further amendments concerning the provisions of the Act and therefore does not have any new implications for the agents. With regard to the composition of the agents, the minister can currently create posts of Deputy Director General and that of Assistant Director General. This will be amended as to provide for posts at equivalent level of Deputy Director General and the abolishment of post of Assistant Director General. In terms of the bill, the minister must establish branches, chief directorates and directorates and prescribe the functions and post structures thereof. In terms of delegated authority, the Director General must establish divisions and components and prescribe the functions and post structures thereof. In terms of the bill, Chairperson, the training fund currently provided for the South African National Academy of Intelligence, it will now become a training fund for the state security agents and will now be administered by the Director General of the State Security Agency, who will also take overall functions concerning the training fund from the CEO of SANAI. This is to make sure that the accounting officer assumes overall responsibility for accounting for the department. The functions, honorable members, of the Director General currently refer to the Director General concerned or the CEO. In terms of the bill, there will only be a reference to the Director General as all the relevant functions will be attached to a single post once the bill comes into effect. In regard to the functions of the Director General, an additional reporting channel for the Director General will be established by the bill that provides as follows. The Director General must, at the end of each financial year, submit to the Minister a report of the activities of the agency for the relevant financial year that must include information about any cooperation by the agency with an authority of another country in planning or undertaking activities pertaining to the agency's mandate, and except for classified information, this report is to be publicly accessible. As soon as practicable, after receipt of the report, the minister must table the report to Parliament. Currently, Chairperson, the practice is that the minister must approve the erection and maintenance of buildings. In terms of the bill, these functions will be delegated to the Director General. Further amendments in the Intelligence Services Act, Chairperson. In regard to retirement, the bill provides that a member shall have the right to retire at the age of 55 or any date thereafter. This provision is in line with the Public Services Act. However, if a member retires before the age of 60, there will still be penalties involved as provided for in the regulation of the pension fund. Currently, Chaplain, a member is deemed to have been discharged if such a member is without permission of the Director General absent for a period exceeding 14 consecutive days. This provision will be amended to the effect of a period of 10 consecutive working days. This amendment will alleviate certain payroll problems. It is not a policy change. Concerning the Intelligence Services Council on Conditions of Service, there will be a change of name to the Intelligence Council on Conditions of Service. The past naming protocol referred to intelligence services. They no longer are many intelligence services that the council would be dealing with. Chairperson, currently the council consists of not more than 3 persons or members appointed on contract by the minister, one of whom must be the chairperson. In future, no member will form part of the council anymore, as it will consist of not more than 3 persons appointed on contract. In future, Chairperson, all medals awarded by the State Security Agency would be registered with the Bureau of Heraldry in terms of the Heraldry Act 1962. Again, this is not a policy change. It is just aligning our laws with other existing laws that have hitherto not been aligned. The following new regulations, Chairperson, will have to be issued in light of the amalgamated and consolidation of the dispensation. The establishment, structure and function of the Civilian Intelligence Veterans Association. This association has been in existence, Chairperson. We just felt that it must be codified. The election, representation and functions of the staff forum. Again, a staff forum is in place. We just need to codify it. The supply of departmental intelligence to government departments. This has been the extent practice, but it has not been effectively regulated. Persons authorized to task the agency to gather and produce intelligence. Again, taskings have been received hitherto by intelligence community. We just want predictability and clarity of function. Persons, all assets, liabilities, rights and duties, including funds, resources, and administrative records of the erstwhile structure will, through this bill, be transferred to the State Security Agency within 6 months after the commencement of the Amendment Act, and vest from the date of the transfer in and must from the date be regarded as having been acquired or incurred by the SSA. I can report, Chairperson, that we have already advanced in this regard following the permission given by the Minister of Finance to file a single report, a single financial statement and report on the activities of the department. So this already is the extent practice that is just awaiting consolidation through the passing of the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Act. From a date to be determined by the Minister by noticing the correct, will cease to exist the juristic persons and must, for the purposes of the Companies Act of 2008, be regarded as having been wound up. The Companies and Intellectual Property Commission must, upon receipt of a notification by the Director General of the date contemplated in the previous paragraph, deregister Comsec as a company in terms of the Companies Act with effect from the third date. No notice or filing fee or other charge will be payable in respect of the deregistration of Comsec. I must say, Chairperson, that again, with the approval given by the responsible ministers, steps have already been taken to make sure that these issues are attended to as provided already by the proclamation. Chairperson, a registrar of deeds must, upon the production to him or her of a certificate by the minister, that immovable property described in the certificate versed in the SSA in terms of paragraph 9 above, and make such entries and endorsements as he or she may deem necessary in or any relevant register, title deed, or other document in his or her office, so as to give effect to paragraph 9 above. No duty, office fee, or other charge will be payable in respect of any entry or endorsement that will have to be made as a result of the consolidation of the dispensation. Chairperson, if an inquiry into alleged misconduct has been instituted by any of the erstwhile structures but has not yet been concluded at the time of the commencement of the Act, such proceedings will continue and conclude and be concluded in accordance with the law in terms of which the inquiry was instituted. This, Chairperson, is to make sure that there is effective transition in the nature of the dispensation. So, Chair, disciplinary proceedings may be instituted and concluded in terms of the Intelligence Services Act against alleged improper conduct of any person who at any time prior to the commencement of the Amendment Act was in the service of any of the current components, provided that the act or omission concerned is substantially the same as an act constituting misconduct in terms of the Intelligence Services Act. In this regard, we can indicate, Chapter 6, that there are no changes in this regard that have been effected, as we are seeking to keep the dispensation the same. Chapter 6, any employee of Comsec appointed in terms of Section 14, Subsection 1 of the Comsec Act must be transferred to the SSA on the terms and conditions which may not be less favorable than the remunerations and terms and conditions applicable to that person immediately before his or her transfer, and he or she remains entitled to all rights, benefits, including pension benefits and privileges to which chairperson they were entitled immediately before such a transfer. Chairperson, we now talk a little bit about the integration of the South African National Academy of Intelligence. As we have already indicated, the bill transfers the training mandate to the State Security Agency to integrate training with our core business so that the Academy serves primarily the interest of the State Security Agency and its members in order to ensure their effectiveness and to advance their professionalism. Clause 17, Chairperson, provides for the establishment of a training fund, as I've already indicated. That fund will now be administered by the accounting officer and director general of the agency. The accreditation and recognition of the agency's qualifications must be done in accordance with the provisions of the National Qualifications Framework Act of 2008. Chairperson, as it is now clear, the amendments to existing law through the General Intelligence Law Amendment Bill will provide a sound legal footing to achieve a new intelligence dispensation that is geared for the dynamic and evolving challenges of the 21st century facing our country and our people. The amendment is the most effective approach to restructuring of the intelligence architecture which brings into being the State Security Agency while providing the necessary legal basis to ensure stability and clarity on service delivery mandate of this new agency. The restructuring of the intelligence architecture, as provided for by the presidential proclamation, is one of the priorities in the period leading to 2014. It will ensure that the country has an intelligence service that is in line with the provisions of our constitution. It will also deal with the challenges of duplication, provide focus on core business, maximize productivity, whilst maintaining well-motivated, agile, and focused personnel. Chair, we table the General Intelligence Law motivation for your consideration and further deliberation and guidance. We thank you for the opportunity, and we once more table the apology of the minister in light of him being away on duty. Thank you, Chair, and honourable member.
Thank you, Mr. Ramo. Honourable members, that is the presentation in terms of the overall proposed amendment to the laws referred to there. And time for questions for clarity. Honourable Khale, Honourable Nube, Honourable Munsinti, and Honourable Adam.
Thank you, Chairperson. If ever I did not understand, they will train me and help me to understand. From page under the National Strategic Intelligence Act Amendment, where the bill provides that the DG may in writing, there's no numbers. But the heading is under the National Strategic Intelligence Act Amendment, where the bill provides that the DG may in writing delegate the authority previously vested in him to issue the grant, withdraw or refuse to grant a security clearance after evaluating the information gathered during the vetting investigation to other members. I was thinking that maybe they'll say the DG after consultation with the either the minister or the office of the president. He can then arrive on this conclusion. Why do I think so? It's because of the Kuka saga that has just happened. I'm thinking that if ever we're going to maybe put all this responsibility under the DG, he's not going to end up driving him on the very same issue that happened recently. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Maybe can you be advised before we pick it ourselves? Is there any controversial clause or clauses here? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, it's just clarity on the amalgamation of the other entities. Our colleague indicates that there won't be any compromise on the oversight work that will be still undertaken. I suppose in the past, oversight work used to impinge on the work of NEASAS, SAMAI, and CONSET. Now, if all these entities have been collapsed into one, and you have disbanded completely SANAI and, I mean, NEA and COMSEC, which entity would oversight be conducted on? Because it will only be the State Security Agency that is left. So it does that I want to understand if the State Security Agency would be able to report on each and every entity. So so that as and when the reports emerge, the work of each and every entity would be covered by the State Security Agency. That is one chairperson. Another point of clarity is the question of the age of resignation within the forces. Whether 55 at the term of retirement, whether the term of retirement is officially prescribed as 55 years. And if it is so, I heard of some penalties which could take place if a person resigns at 60. Unless if I did not understand, but I need clarity with respect to that issue. And then the last one, chairperson, it's on the... there was something about 10 days and 14 days. I didn't capture it properly here. That's right. The legislation says 10 days. The current legislation. Pardon? The current legislation says, or you mean the amendments that have been brought? Okay. No, that is clear. Yeah. No, thanks.
I'm fine now, Chair. Just the thing is that, I know that no act is cast in stone, and there's always amendment to act. But on the threat of the threat confronting the country and the nation, for me, this is very serious. And the amendments that have been brought in now should have been brought in 1994 already. Why only now? If you look at the sets of threats that have been page 11, there's two page 11s here. They've doubled up with page 11 on my document. You know, the first threat relates to the stability of the Republic, constitutional order and state institutions. So it puts a spin on and a wandering spin on. Is our SSA or the agency or intelligence services, are they not stable in the light of what is happening now, in the light of what is happening in the continent and even in South Africa? Because there is things that is a worrying factor, because from my understanding of intelligence is that they're the first people to pick up anything that happens within a state, or that's about to happen within the state. Our country is growing. I mean, a couple of years we were at 40 million people. 12 years down the line, we had 50 million people. Another year or two down the line, with 52 million people. So, intelligence laws need to be updated, I would say, on an annual basis. Not just wait for a whole set to happen or for things to happen, and then comes to Parliament to update the laws. Because intelligence plays a major role, and a major part is one of these departments that is very critical, because if we don't pick up anything, or intelligence has not picked up anything, our country can really become those that will be controlled by the so-called, as they say, terrorists and all these other funny people that say. So if I could just get the rationale Why now? When have they seen these threats? Why wasn't it picked up earlier? And how urgent is it that this amendment should be done for this bill to be passed? Thank you.
On page 25 of this document, I still remember this one. The one was inserted. Yeah, but the DG was using this one, I think. Although they are talking the same thing, but for. You have this one, you got this one yesterday. Okay, but whatever I'm going to say is there on that document as well. It says currently the council consists of not more than 3 persons or members appointed on conduct by the minister, one of whom must be the chairperson. The proposal is that in future, no member will form part of the council anymore, meaning it will be, the council will consist of 3 persons appointed on contract. What was the definition of a member then? I just want to understand. But, and the next one is the one relating to assets, page 27, all assets, liabilities, rights and duties, including funds, resources and administrative records of NIASAS, Academy and COSMIC must be transferred to State Security Agency within 6 months. Now, I see on your proposed structure, the academy is still there, although it's like floating, if you could talk to that, so that one understands its transfer of assets, because in your proposed structure is there, but I think it's floating, linked to the green, whatever. And lastly, from my slide, will be to allow you, TG, to... Oh, another movie?
Yeah. I just want to my question.
Oh, thank you. The question relating to whether there's any controversial or whatever
yeah.
is being withdrawn. So don't respond to it. You may respond, TG.
It's a person, Perry. One of the challenges we face is the vetting backlog. This is a very serious concern because government has made it very clear that we must first guarantee the integrity of the public servants that work in government. As part of the processes of combating corruption, we have to make sure that the turnaround times for vetting are improved. Now, if we centralize the issuing of vetting certificates, it means that the number of people who are actually supposed to be getting vetting certificates get delayed because of the bottleneck that would be in the office of the Director General. Now, by providing that this function should be delegated to other officers, of course, we will put requisite controls. And I think it's very important to understand that vetting is a daily function that we conduct. It can't be something that would wait lengthy consultative processes. But also, there is a very important principle. We would want at all times, in keeping with the founding principles of the South African Intelligence Organization, separate political work and operational work.
operations budget must at all times be conducted in keeping with the strict principles that separate areas of responsibility so that there can be effective accountability. The independence and the protection of intelligence officers from undue influence is actually critical. This is a tenet around which intelligence is actually formed. And so the operational people must remain accountable for the operational decisions that they take. So that's really the two main motivations why there is this provision for delegation. Although the question has been withdrawn, I can upfront say that this bill has been agreed to by all the parties in the National Assembly. And although they might not have supported, the changes that were brought to it were all agreed to by all political parties, and they are on record in the report that was tabled in the National Assembly. So as far as we are concerned, it's really a technical, straightforward bill. There have not been any controversies. Even in the media, there have not been controversies about what we are seeking to do. So I can say that upfront and delivering. And the issue of... With regards to the 10 days and 14 days, this is just brought about for the effective management of payroll. Because if a person is away for 10 days, by the time it is time for us to file in salaries for that particular month, if it's 14 days, that time would have passed and would not be able to then ensure that the money that are not definitely paid out to a person concerned. So I just really doing a technical cleanup so that we can better manage those who absent themselves from work for a period exceeding 10 days. There is no policy change in this insofar as we are concerned. Just to clean and ensure predictability that it's 10 consecutive working days so that there is no debate over the interpretation of the time frame. They will not be paid for absence. And because we deem them to have expelled themselves from the service, because we've had instances where members stay away for 10 days working elsewhere. And that is a problem for us. We do not want to have intelligence officers unaccounted for a period of 10 days. They could be working for somebody else, they could have been debriefed, they could have been selling secrets. It's not a situation that is desirable. So that's why we want clarity around it, so that members can have stability and clarity around absence from work. Chairperson, the issue of why now and why not then really would require political explanation. But I can say that I think I've met with all the ministers that have been in intelligence. There is no minister who has never set up a review of intelligence that I worked with. All ministers, Minister Dala Omar in 1996 set up a review when he was the Minister of Justice and Intelligence Services. He did a review together with the Deputy Minister of the time, Mr. John Clancer. When Mr. John Clancer became a Minister of Intelligence, he did a review of the dispensation and also started initiatives at consolidating the disparate technology infrastructure that existed in the intelligence community. Minister Sisulu did a review and also brought about a commission led by the late Professor Magubane, which looked at classification and declassification of intelligence, which was the precursor to the drafting by Minister Caswell of the Protection of State Information Bill. Minister Caswell, as I've already indicated in the presentation, when he became minister, set up the John Matthews Commission to review the intelligence community. Mr. Poele, on becoming the minister,
work together with the Minister of Police, Minister of Defense, to review the dispensation as I've already reported. So I'm quite confident, Chairperson, without being privy to the other reasons, that from the perspective of where I have been working as an operative, this has been a concept to review the environment and to see how best we can respond to the challenges that we face. So it has been an ongoing operation. I can also say that from the service side, this is also a daily occurrence. We are obliged by law that we do a national intelligence estimate. The national intelligence estimate is an annual product of the South African intelligence community. It looks at the threats and potential threats our country faces, and it sets priorities for the intelligence community, which gets approved by cabinet on what intelligence in the country must focus on. So I'm quite confident that there is no reason, Chairperson, for committee members to be anxious that the environment is not being thoroughly scanned and that the capability and focus of our intelligence community is in doubt. I have, and the Minister has yesterday, Chairperson, indicated that we are on the ground. And the early warning that we have been giving on critical areas, the interventions we have done together with our security services to interdict those who sought to bring chaos into our country, who have also been arrested and are going to trial, show that we are on the ground and we are the eyes and the ears of the nation, and we are watching. The Chairperson, during the time of Minister Kassel, the Intelligence Academy was going to be a Department of State. Now, we felt that that's no longer desirable. They must not become a Department of State. They must be a training component for the state security agents dedicated to that function. So the infrastructure will be the infrastructure of the state security agents. So the transfer of assets seeks to consolidate the dispensation under a single accounting officer, because in the previous dispensation, the CEO of the South African National Academy of Intelligence was an accounting officer in their own right. And they had a chief financial officer, which they felt was a duplication. They also had their own deputy, they had their own head of corporate services. And that duplication is what created a huge infrastructure. If I were just to explain that a little bit more, the National Intelligence Agency had a Director General, a CFO, and a Chief of Corporate Services at DDG level. NIA had exactly the same infrastructure. CONSEC had more or less the same infrastructure. SANAI had exactly the same infrastructure. So you actually ended up having deputy directors, generals, and CFOs that were bloating the corporate services environment. All these many people have just been replaced by two people, in the case of the head of corporate services and the CFO. And then the many directors, generals, and the CEO are being replaced by a single individual. Those savings that we would want to maximize to deploy in our operations, Chairperson. So that is really the aim of consolidating the dispensation, clarify accountability. And because there are many asset registers, you now have to consolidate the asset registers. Because there are many licenses, we're now consolidating the licenses. This is leading to savings in funds and is making for a smoother and more focused state security agency. This is what we're currently dealing with. So the consolidation of these and the transfer of the property to the SSA is just to make sure that all of these are owned under one roof, one asset register, and then proper accounting and the accounting officer. The issue of the retirement age, the reason in part why the age of 55 remains in our statute book is that in 1994, during amalgamation, different dispensations provided differently for members of the intelligence community. Most of those who came from the former TBVC states, and as they provided for in the apartheid legislation, came in with those conditions of service, including retiring at the age of 55 with the penalty. It's with penalties at 55 because it's considered early retirement. So you do not get the full package. We are obliged in terms of the law and extant practice to make sure that we do not change the conditions of service of those who are amalgamated and who continue to operate within the intelligence community. Hence our keeping the age of 55, which also aligns with the Public Service Act, because we are obliged to align and to follow the best practice that is applicable. That, Chairperson, I think would be the extent of the question. On the last issue that you have raised, Chairperson, around the IFC and the membership. Chairperson, the change here, again, driven by our quest to combat corruption and to reduce moral hazard, members are defined as members of the civilian intelligence community. Now, here is the problem, that in the intelligence services on conditions of service, the people who manage the conditions of service are the same people who stand to benefit from the conditions of service. This is a moral hazard, in that personal interest can easily creep in, because if I recommend that the increase must be 7%, then I say to get 7%, then there is a little bit of a moral hazard there. We want to avoid that moral hazard by excluding members from participating in the intelligence service on conditions of service, so that you've got objective people who can take the country's interest, look at what is available, and do that which is in the national interest in terms of making recommendations to the minister. It is this moral hazard that we are seeking to confront, and not a change in policy. Again, what we are seeking to do is to consolidate our combating of moral hazards that can easily engender corruption and undermine good governance that a government is seeking to advance. I thank you, Chair and Honourable Member.
Okay, Chairperson, I want clarity from the DG. He said something like from the NA, the members managed to pass the bill. So just want to know whether if ever they managed to pass it, whether with the opposition, are we not supposed to raise issues? That is my question, and I am worried that maybe he should also treat this house with an equal respect that he normally shows the NA. Thanks. Must I start from the beginning?
Yes.
Okay. In a response to the question that Singh rose, he said this bill is passed by both opposition and the leading members of the leading party from the NA. So my question was, if ever it has been part of that side, are we not supposed to raise issues? Or is he not giving us the same seat as the NCOP member?
Oh, thank you, Chair. The parliament, in terms of the constitution, consists of two houses that make the parliament. The National Council of Provinces and the National Assembly. But here, although there is the National Assembly as part of the bill, but there's outside external forces also that run to court with everything. Even if Parliament just sneezes, or even if it's got how many in Parliament pass the bill on both hours, some of them sometimes go to sleep, wake up, they're not happy with the thing, they form a lobby group within a day, they go to court within the same day. As they have been provisioned as the department or the DG and his the minister and the staff and the DG made provision for that external forces also in terms of this amendments in this bill, of the Principal Act and amendments of the bill. Because some people can say or as the minister said, as the DG said, and last night I've heard it on a talk show, and it was one of these push radio, one of these things. Specifically where the minister said in the house yesterday, his budget, that we are on the ground. And the call was saying, if the minister says that they were on the ground, where were they when Marikana started? Where were they when a lot of things started? And as a matter of fact, one of the calls even said, where is intelligence with this gang unit in the Western Cape? When people are shooting and killing each other, where is intelligence? And all that. So as there have been provision made for external forces that wake up tomorrow and says, no, we are now running, and take this bill to the Constitutional Court to test the validity of it, will it stood the test of time, like Castle Lager, or will it hold water? If it goes through the rough sea, will it be able to withstand the pressure like the submarine, or the ones that have built in Germany, but proper submarines, what it all that? Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I think I've got the same trouble that Honourable Digali and Honourable Adams said, that I'm not sure that the National Assembly accepts this bill and that they're without changes, and I'm not sure. I like to know what they said and what is going on. And the second thing, I was looking through this, and they said this council is of three persons, members appointed on contact by the minister. I like to know the process. How are these three persons appointed by the minister? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable, your hand was up for follow-up.
I was just checking if our colleague answered my question on whether oversight is not compromised by collapsing all this structure.
Okay. Thank you for that. And Just one clarity again, Mr. Drummer. Now that all the CEOs and everybody else is replaced by one person, which is the DG, and we've got the NCC, the domestic and the foreign arms under the state security agency. So those are the units that will be reporting direct to the DG. And everything will be processed in that way. They are like units. They are no longer independent departments. Okay. You may clarify further the point three.
Chairperson, I really would like through you, to all honourable members, if I created an impression that I don't respect the sound, to apologise unconditionally, because I do. The reason why I'm here is because I respect them. And I have been fielding questions respectfully because I respect the House. So if there is anything that I have said or the tone I have adopted that created the impression that I'm disrespectful, I sincerely apologize. It is not my intention at all to undermine the provisions of our Constitution. I am here because I understand that Parliament comprises of two houses, that the two houses have got the possibility of working together in passing the laws of our country, and that each is demanded by the Constitution to apply their mind to the legislation that is in front of them. I have absolutely no intention of creating the impression that they are just going to rubber stamp the legislation in front of them. I have no such expectation, Chairperson. If I created that impression, I repeat, I unconditionally apologize. I am not a person like that.
I treat this house with the same decorum and respect that I treat the National Assembly. And if there is anything that I've done or said that suggests to the contrary, I'd like the record to show that that was not my intention. So I expect, as per constitutional provision, members to apply their minds. Maybe I add by answering a question that was withdrawn. And therefore maybe I should also withdraw my response so that I do not leave any negative energy in the house. That's not my intention at all. I was just trying to indicate that unlike the Protection of State Information Bill, which came to the National Assembly followed by a truckload of concerns and complaints in the doi inside and outside, this one was different in that sense. That's all I sought to allude to. And respectfully, I apologize and withdraw anything that suggests that I'm disrespectful. So that would be the first one, Chairperson. I think the second one also relate to that. But the part that I'd like to respond to is that as government, the approach that we are adopting is to support those of members of the South African public who are using the constitutional system of our country and the processes and mechanisms that our constitution provides. So if they go to court, we have absolutely no problem with that. If they use the legitimate channels created for by the constitution, protest peacefully and engage openly without carrying weapons, without infringing and endangering members of the public, we have absolutely no concern with those processes. What is of concern to us are those marching with weapons, those plotting and planning to kill others, disrupt and infringe the rights of others. There we have people on the ground whose task it is to ensure that there is any warning. And we can say without fear of contradiction, and the minister repeated it yesterday, that there are very few incidents that happen in this country that we are not aware of. The biggest problem, and the President addressed this in the State of the Nation address, where he indicated that South Africans have a right to protest peacefully and unarmed as provided for in the Constitution. But where people undermine the authority of the state, it's our responsibility to take action. And we are working towards that end, Chairperson, to make sure that those are brought to book, and we have infrastructure in that regard that will be unleashed by the state when the situation so demands. So again, Chairperson, if I created the impression that the National Assembly did not change the bill that was tabled by the minister, I did not mean to create that impression. There was robust engagement, and there were a lot of issues that were in the original bill. In the original bill, for example, there were major changes that were proposed to NICOC. The National Assembly, when looking at those changes, came to the conclusion that those were not technical. They were fundamental policy shifts. The minister, and on the basis of some of those findings, went back to the National Assembly and suggested that the National Strategic Intelligence Act must not be changed, that the office of the coordinator must remain as is, that the reporting lines must also not be changed until there has been a process of engaging, which will result from the review of the white paper and the tabling of the National Strategic Intelligence Act. And so the changes there are simply to make sure that there is alignment with the changed structures in the intelligence community. So I was really not saying
that there is no change that we made by the National Assembly. I was just saying that after that engagement in the changes, when they adopted the report, they were at one with the changes, that there was nothing which was untoward or controversial. That's what I was seeking to allude to. So I apologize if I created the impression that it did nothing when it comes to the bill. That's not what I was hoping to communicate. Sometimes the language fails me. Chairperson, in terms of the appointment of members of the council, if you permit me, I will just read the current section 22 of the Intelligence Services Act. It provides as follows. One, there is hereby established an Intelligence Services Council on conditions of service, which consists of not more than three persons or members appointed on contract by the minister, one of whom must be the chairperson. The members contemplated in subsection 1 must be fit and proper persons with a thorough knowledge of the functioning of intelligence services. The functions of the Intelligence Services Council are to make recommendations to the minister on the development of policies on conditions of service and human resource matters, to make recommendations to the minister on the improvement of salaries and fringe benefits of members on an annual basis, and to promote measures and set standards to ensure that effective and efficient performance and implementation of policies on human resources within the academy or the intelligence services, as the case may be, and to make recommendations to the minister. Now, in terms of the process, my recollection is that the Act does not necessarily provide for those. Those are normally, therefore, left to the discretion of the minister following recommendations by the department, which would then look at a number of people and suggest to the minister that he should consider appointing from amongst that number, the requisite number of members to become the Intelligence Services Council on Conditions of Service. We are working on making sure that in future this is properly regulated and that there will be a regulation that will deal with matters pertaining to the smooth functioning of the Intelligence Service Council on Conditions of Service. And I hope that I have addressed the question. Now, with regards to the oversight, the question, in short, is oversight not going to be compromised by the amalgamation? My take on it, Chairperson, is that it would not be compromised. And maybe I should just, with your permission, just elaborate that a little bit. The first one is that the domestic environment requires stringent adherence to particular laws. For example, in the domestic environment, the interception environment is well regulated and requires that the RICA prescripts, that is the provision of the regulation of what is the correct title of RICA? In full, just write for me, please. The RICA Act has got very clear provision. In that environment, a judge must give you the authority before you can intercept communications, etc., etc. So that is applicable in the domestic environment. So those who are working in the domestic environment must be trained, must be oriented, must be capacitated to work in accordance with all the applicable domestic laws. That environment, therefore, would require that when oversight bodies, for example, when the Inspector General does certification of how we conducted operations in the domestic environment, one of the criteria that she uses is to check if we have adhered to the provisions of RICA in approving operations, that when intrusive methods were utilized, we were duly authorized. This provision does not apply in the foreign environment. And therefore, those who are working in the foreign environment, they too have got internal directives that they must adhere to, but they do not have the same stringent laws that would apply in the domestic environment. So oversight on the conduct of intelligence would still require that the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence must receive a report from the Inspector General on the conduct of the intelligence of the state security agents members who operate in the domestic environment. The same thing would be applicable in the work that is done by National Communication Center, in that environment. There again, there are regulations. Those regulations would have to be adhered to. Oversight would still be expected to check if there is proper adherence and accountability for the exercise of such power. The title is the Regulation of Interception of Communications and Provision of Communication-Related Information Act 20 of 2002, which I called in short RICA, for those who are listening to the tape. On the Intelligence Academy and the reporting line, Chairperson, because the dispensation is not yet complete, it will depend on how you would want a Parliament to finalize the legislation. But on the basis of the current practice, these report to the Director General, each of those have got what we call an equivalent of a chief operations officer, because in the domestic environment we've got the director for the domestic branch, and we've got the director for the foreign branch, and then we've got deputy director general. These two are at the level of what you call, there is a rank of a director general, because of the command and control responsibilities that they have. And then in the other structure, the deputy director general that are actually heading those and report. There's also corporate services who then all report to the director general. That's the way in which we are currently configured, subject to the finalization of the legislation and how it will pan out in the end. And then the minister, once the law has been promulgated and assented to by the president, then finalize the disposition. But at the moment, this is the thinking, that we would continue to work on this basis. And this is the information also we put in our website about how we're working. Thank you.
Honorable Munsisi and Nuga.
The two last issues. Just a further understanding on the issue of oversight. You have referred to the application to the judge as and when interception has to take place. Now, the judge does come to the committee, to the committee to give reports. Now, in terms of the structure, the reorganization of the structure right now, we would like to understand if the judge will continue to do that, or that will be done through a senior person, or probably the DG will go oversee the whole process. And then secondly, both the domestic and foreign heads also presented themselves to the committee for purposes of report and so on. Now they themselves as well would like to know if continuous oversight and interaction with them will still be continuous. And then the last one that has been is just about rating. When you delegate rating, are we not running the risk? I understand that the AG's office might be clogged with requests from a number of agencies and a number of other, probably the police and so on. When you delegate rating, are the standards not going to be one? By the extent to which the delegation of those responsibilities will go. How far is delegation going to go? With respect to the police, with respect to the defense, and with respect to the intelligence forces. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Partially covered, but let me put it by Comrade Dan. But remember then, the question of delegating the responsibility of vetting, or further delegating, this is an intelligence matter. The backlog, or the backlogs on vetting, is it the question of maybe, does it allow the amendment of an act? Maybe it's a question of rearranging your work rather than delegating. When we were faced, when there was this hullabaloo of the Gupta, nobody wanted to take responsibility for further delegating. So to me, this delegation is not going to address the problem, but it may open up more other risks. Not even unintended, but we're putting ourselves to more risk. Thank you.
Honorable Adam. Okay, I think the question that I posed, look, people have got the constitutional right to use all avenues, which we threaten to law, as per the constitution, but why? I mean, I was asking, is the act or the amendments, can it withstand if it goes to the Constitutional Court or it's been challenged? That is the answer that I'm seeking.
Mr. Zamo.
The Chairperson, Honourable Members, once more time. Chairperson, the answer to the first question is yes. The judge will continue to grant permissions and to report to the Joint Spending Committee on Intelligence and would be able to bring to the attention of the committee any abuses, any misuse of the system, and whatever challenges exist. So too will the Inspector General continue to have unlimited access to the information and operations of the service, and will still be able to conduct investigation as guided by the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence and all the responsible ministers of the respective intelligence structure. Furthermore, Chairperson, we believe that all officers, all intelligence officers, continue to be available to the committee if and when the situation would demand. If there is a need to interview those are conducting surveillance, if there are particular concerns about it, as has been the extent practice, the committee will continue to have the same powers and to be able to engage with those members. So the heads of the respective units, if they are required to appear in front of the committee, they too would be available to answer questions as and when required by the committee. None of those powers of the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence and the other and oversight structures are going to change. We hope that they will continue to do their work without fear, favor, or prejudice in the protection and advancement of our national interest. Chairperson, the issue of delegation, I stand guided. All we were giving is the rationale of why we as a department, with the approval of our minister, had made the proposal that we are making. But we are here, we stand guided by the House. The House ultimately will have to tell us what we must do. And once the House has pronounced itself, we will act in accordance with the legislation that will be passed. Ours is to adhere to the constitutional provisions and to the provisions of the law. We are here subject to that. Chairperson, our legal advice that we have says this is sound, it will pass constitutional muster, and there is nothing in it that can be successfully challenged in the way in which we are seeking to deal with this. We are inspired by the Constitution in the changes that we make, because the Constitution provides that the creation of the intelligence community or any intelligence service must be done by the President through national legislation. And the definition of national legislation includes subordinate legislation, which includes the proclamation that the President issued in 2009 to get this process on the go. We therefore believe that it is on sound constitutional footing, Chairperson and honorable members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zoma. I think our members, all the questions have been sufficiently clarified, and your apology is well received, Mr. Zoma.
No, I don't want to disagree with the TG, but you know, in life and in Parliament, we tend to agree to disagree and to disagree to agree. Whether legislation has been written in that, but you know, we've created also the constitutional dispensation for anyone to challenge anything. And like I said, one question was that because of the seriousness of this thing, and I think that you and your department and the minister and that Africa wants these amendments to be done as soon as possible. So we don't want, you know, our South Africa is structured. You go to Africa, you go to anywhere, people are saying to you, your freedom, your democracy. Any mad person can wake up and then just hold to court and challenge anything that even the president they can challenge. They even call the president to court, which never happens in other democracies. So, but I'm happy that the DG said it's sound. It can withstand the test of time like Carson Lara. And based on that, but you know, the point is that people will look at any legal opportunity to challenge, not but to delay and to make a stand, trying to make a name for themselves in terms of, even if it's an amendment, to come out of it. Thank you.
Point noted, Honourable Adams. Honourable members, that concludes the briefing on the bill by the department and clarification of all questions raised by members. So I would suggest, Honourable members, that in terms of the program that we reflected upon last week, our next meeting is next Thursday. Now that we've been briefed, I think it will be in order that we allow U.S. members and parties now to reflect on the proposed amendments. And when we meet next week, you would then be given an opportunity to table whatever areas that you would want to be deliberated upon or changed. If there would be nothing, or if we all agree on the proposals, then that meeting will then finalize on this particular bill and prepare a report for tabling in the House before or on the true date. Read. Thank you very much, honorable members. Then the next item, which is the last item, is the adoption of the last week's minutes. It's only one page. Have been circulated. May I get the mover?
Oh. I move.
Honorable Munsitsi, Honorable Becker, you support.
Yeah.
And that is by Honorable Adams.
No,
that brings us to the end of this meeting, Honorable members. Honorable Doma and your team, thank you very much for being with us. State Advisor, thank you very much, sir, for being with us. We still hope to be with you again next week. This meeting ends at 10. I thank you very much.
Okay, so what I need to go to What?
Thank you.